There were tools for personal empowerment, the Kundalini yoga, I'm really drawn to the mantra meditations and saying mantras every day, what felt like a very nourishing and empowering thing to do, mainly because, you know, I'm spending a little bit of my day in that very centered, balanced place that can be so nurturing to find.
How can functional medicine, raw foods, and natural healing have an impact on the trajectory of a cancer diagnosis? Let's talk all about it with author and clinical nurse specialist Jocelyn Johnson, right here in episode 465 of The Nurse Keith Show. Hey there, this is Nurse Keith. This podcast is about you and your personal and professional development, your career, and the healthcare system writ large. And I'm here to share education, ideas, diatribes, and informative interviews with some of the most inspiring people from the worlds of healthcare, nursing, entrepreneurship, medicine, tech, and beyond. I love having you along for the ride, and I thank you from the bottom of my nurse podcaster's heart for being part of the growing Nurse Keith Nation. If you'd like to help other people find the show, you can honor my ubiquitous request to leave a rating and review on Apple or Google or Amazon or Spotify podcasts, or just share the show with anyone who you think might enjoy it from the app where you are listening. And if you'd like to become a patron, you can go to patreon.com, patreon.com/nursekeith. As little as $2 a month is a great way to help keep the lights on and the cameras rolling. Well, microphones rolling, because there's no cameras here. And if you'd like to pledge more, there's lots of tokens of appreciation that I will send you, several of which would come via the good old U.S. Postal Service. Imagine that. I appreciate you all so much. The show notes will be on the app where you're listening, or they'll be at nursekeith.com in the drop-down menu labeled podcasts. As I just said at the top of the show, we're here with Jocelyn Johnson, a clinical nurse specialist and a author, and we have a lot to talk about, Jocelyn, when it comes to cancer, functional medicine, raw foods, natural healing. The first question I have for you is, what did you understand about how cancer can be approached when you first received a diagnosis?
Well, I have to say that when I first received the diagnosis of uterine cancer, I made some changes in my diet. I really didn't take a big jump into it until I was diagnosed with the recurrence. I would say I did a lot of introspective work and a lot of meditation and yoga. Beside the dietary changes, I did use some supplements. But when I got the recurrence diagnosis, I really launched into high gear. And that's when I really started to enact a way of what I thought would have the potential to reverse the cancer that I was dealing with.
I see. But when you had your first diagnosis, what did you do in terms of approaching it and its treatment? What was your approach that first time?
Well, I consulted with an oncologist, and I was told that the standard of care at that point would be a total hysterectomy, where they would check to see, confirm what stage the cancer was in, and to see if it had metastasized outside of the uterus. And I was told that the odds were really high with the hysterectomy, as in 90% cure. That kind of led me to believe this is the way to go. It's pretty simple. I'm an older woman past menopause. I'm not sure I need the organs at this point. So why not go with that? You know, I'm not shy about choosing the way you go. I'm not a purist with regard to natural means. And for me, the decision at that point in time was, this looks like a pretty successful treatment and I should do this. Mm-hmm. So I should do the hysterectomy. I certainly took it on because, you know, whenever you have cancer, you begin to wonder, is it my fault? Is there something that I need to do to heal within myself because I somehow brought this on myself? I think it's very common to wonder if something you're doing psychologically, some way you're interfering with your own health, has brought the diagnosis to you. I think I have a different perspective about it now because of how hard I worked with that original diagnosis. I really cleaned up my diet significantly. I already had a sauna and I was doing more saunas then. I did a bunch of supplements that are anti-tumor related and kept that up for, you know, 9 months to a year. And then I had the recurrence. So I had to really rethink it and approach it the second time with the sense of, there's other things at work here and maybe I'm not bringing it on myself in some way that I don't support my own health. Mm-hmm. There are likely external factors that I need to really look at seriously.
And just for the listeners' edification, did you have the hysterectomy?
I did.
Yeah.
And what they found in that was no lymph involvement. Hmm. It was still a stage 2 cancer. So, and the cell line of the grade of the cancer was still grade 1. So it was a early stage as far as cancers go in terms mm-hmm. of the cell line and how far it had reached within right. my system.
Well, that's good. So it was early. And since you had the hysterectomy, where did the recurrence appear? Where did it manifest?
It manifests in my vagina.
Mm-hmm.
And it was not along the suture line, which is where the oncologist would have expected it to be. It was, you know, in the body of my vagina, which was unusual, apparently. But again, it was the same cell line. It had not mutated into a more aggressive form. And with my decision then not to pursue the conventional treatment that was recommended to me, I made a calculated decision that it was in the early stages and that I would be more likely to be able to reverse it because of it being in the early stages.
Yeah, which was very fortunate on many, many levels, right?
Yes.
And so you're a clinical nurse specialist. You're an RN, master's prepared. You've worked in mental health for over a quarter century. And just for truth of disclosure, you actually worked with my ex-wife in the mental health center almost 25 years ago. That's how you and I originally met many, many years ago in a whole different life in Massachusetts. And so you're a nurse and you understand, you've studied, you understand the body and pathology and all those sorts of things. So you had the benefit of professional training and I'm sure, you know, colleagues and access to journals and all the things that we healthcare professionals have. So you had the education and background to be able to inform all of these decisions, which is also a great benefit when one is sick and becomes the patient.
True.
What was your initial emotional / spiritual response to having a cancer diagnosis? You know, what was happening inside of you?
The initial diagnosis, I was pretty shocked, actually, because, you know, I have a pretty sensitive system. I already knew there were a number of foods I shouldn't eat because it was difficult for me, like cheeses and I already ate a lot of vegetables. You know, I would say that my lifestyle was already pretty healthy. No carbonated beverages, no alcohol, no smoking.
You sound
Did
a lot
yoga
like me.
every day. Yeah, right. Buyer beware. Yeah, so it was surprising. It definitely was surprising. And I suppose, you know, because I had family members that died of cancer, maybe there was a certain hubris about it to think of myself as being that healthy, you know. But it happened.
Yeah.
You know, and then you're just faced with dealing with it. One of the ironic things was, you know, I was in the process of taking coursework through the Institute of Functional Medicine, and they have different modules that you take. And it was a month after I had taken the hormone module, where I had heard all about, you know, estrogen and estrogen-based cancers, where I started bleeding vaginally, and then was diagnosed with the uterine cancer. So, yeah, I did have the advantage of feeling more informed, you know, being comfortable with my understanding of the physiology. And that part may have made it less scary for me. But having cancer is pretty doggone scary, I have to say.
It is pretty damn scary. Yeah, I've lost many, many people to cancer. As most people have, you know. And you had already had a grounding in functional medicine before you were diagnosed. So you had that benefit as well, having an understanding. And I've covered functional medicine somewhat on this show with a couple different guests. But what are the five R's, like the bases of functional medicine and their approach?
Well, the five R's are a way of thinking about correcting problems in the body. So the five R's are remove, replace, reinoculate, repair, and redirect or rebalance. They've changed the last one to rebalance.
So remove means removing, I'm assuming, like removing foods and practices and aspects of lifestyle that
are harmful,
not healthy.
Okay. Yes.
And then you replace them. Next step is replace with healthy things, right?
Exactly.
Yeah. And then the third one is?
Reinoculate.
Tell me about that.
So much of our health and ability to rebalance is dependent upon healthy biomes in our various cavities. So in my journey with the cancer, it was both digestive biome, gut bacteria, and vaginal biome, you know, bacteria that support a healthy vaginal cavity.
So reinoculation means using food, supplements, et cetera, in order to strengthen and reestablish a healthier biome.
Exactly.
Right.
Yes.
And there's a lot of attention being paid to that in all sorts of literature, not just functional medicine literature. So I think the word's out, and it's becoming more the common vernacular rather than something that's really like way out in left field, don't you think?
Yeah, you know, what was highlighted to me that's kind of missing is there are different biomes for different cavities within the human body, and also even skin has its own biome, a healthy biome. So the whole process of understanding what constitutes a healthy vaginal biome or a healthy bladder biome, both which affect women's health significantly, there's not a lot of research yet establishing those things. There, you can buy now probiotics for women that have some of the specific bacteria that are known to help women in it. And but it's really still a new field of investigation,
right,
even amidst the functional medicine world.
Yeah. So the gut biome, I guess, to more correctly say, that's the part that's becoming a little more mainstream. And people talk about, you know, the intestinal flora, and, you know, you see probiotics at the pharmacy, CVS now, right? So there's some awareness that's been growing around that, which is great. And hopefully the other aspects of that will become pervasive in medicine and then leak out into the general public, no pun intended, in terms of like leaky gut syndrome. and then what's the fourth one after we have remove, replace, re-inoculate?
Repair.
Repair, which makes a lot of sense. And
yeah.
And my assumption is, based on your book, it's a wonderful book called A Path Forward, My Journey to Find Healing Through Integrative Medicine by Jocelyn Johnson, that the repair part can come in many, many forms. And from what I gleaned from your book and from your story is that the repair isn't just physical. The repair comes on multiple levels. So how would you characterize that repair journey?
Well, certainly I was pursuing physical repair with what I did. You know, the second round with cancer, I really pursued getting toxins out of my system so that my tissues could return to a healthier norm. And then I did a lot of kind of soul searching on the emotional level, on the mental level, the spiritual level, to try to reduce my angst, my stress, and find ways of kind of reinvigorating my will to live, you know, my passion for pursuing knowledge and exploring the world, learning new things. So that was a very important piece for kind of giving me the will, the strength to pursue in the midst of the uncertainty and the fear.
Yeah. So you were doing all sorts of work on the physical level, right? Doing the functional medicine approach that we were just talking about. Mm-hmm. And then throughout the book, you talk about, you know, there's the memoir part of the book, which tells your story. And then there's the second part of the book, which is more about the, I guess you call them the healing tools, everything you used. And then in the appendix, we've got four appendices. We have raw foods, a particular meditation you found helpful, the I Am Light meditation. And then you have healing and affirmation, healing with affirmations and meridian energies, and then Kundalini yoga meditations. So you kind of bring it all together. You have the story, and then you have, okay, here's the problem, here's the story, and then here are the tools I used, right? Yeah. So in that context, that's part of that whole that fourth step in the four R's, right? And so that's the preponderance of how you basically approach the entire experience, right? On every level, physical, spiritual, emotional,
mental.
Mm-hmm. And how important do you feel the mental, emotional, spiritual part is when dealing with something like cancer?
I think it's huge. Mm-hmm. I think, you know, what I did felt empowering. I think were I to have gone the conventional route, I would have dealt with more sense of disempowerment while I was waiting to see what my body's response was to the radiation treatment that they wanted to give me. And you know, I think it was heartening for my spirit, and it was quite the journey to learn how to rebalance the states of emotional distress as they would arise. You know, most people who have cancer, I think, go through similar things like I did every time you come up against another exam period where you've been kind of going along for months, kind of uncertain about what your status is. There's this buildup that goes on you get closer and closer and closer to this next exam that can be very intense emotionally. And, you know, I pursued learning in the face of that as a way of self-regulating, as a way of calming myself down. The healing affirmation protocol that I kind of pulled together from various sources was inspired in order to deal with some pretty significant angst about thinking that I was dealing with another relapse. So there were tools for personal empowerment. Some of the things that I did, you know, Kundalini yoga, I'm really drawn to the mantra meditations and saying mantras every day, what felt like a very nourishing and empowering thing to do, mainly because, you know, I'm spending a little bit of my day in that very centered, balanced place that can be so nurturing to find.
Mm-hmm. And I'm sure you had a community of people around you, friends and family, right? You had support.
I did have some support. Yeah. I was pretty selective about that.
Mm-hmm.
And that, you know, that's always a personal choice.
Mm-hmm.
I think there needs to be some kind of nurturing social cocoon in a way. And, you know, you hear people with cancer kind of not talking a whole lot to friends, of relationships feeling more distant. And I totally understand that, you know, there's a need to be selective about that and surround yourself with people that really feel like they're not going to trigger your fears, and you're not going to be taking care of them when there's so much to do to take care of yourself.
Or they're going to be arguing with you about your choices, or saying you should do this, you should do that, you shouldn't do this, you shouldn't do that, because we can get into that when we're facing something like cancer too. And that's no fun, because you need to, I mean, of course you want people's input at times, but you need to follow the path that feels best to you, and everyone's different.
Exactly.
Mm-hmm.
Exactly.
Well, when we come back from the break, I want to talk more about the book. I want to reveal the fifth R, and because we've covered four so far, we have to get to the fifth one. And I'd also just like to talk a little bit about some of these tools that you used and delve into it just a little bit more. So when we come back from the break, we'll do all that and more with Jocelyn Johnson right here on episode 465 of The Nurse Keith Show. And welcome back to the second half of the episode. We're here again on episode 465 with friend of the pod and my friend and colleague, Jocelyn Johnson, author and clinical nurse specialist. And Jocelyn, right before the break, we were talking about the four R's of functional medicine. But before we get into number five, I would love for you to read a little passage from your book, because I always like listeners to hear a book in the author's own words. There's nothing like it. So you can take it away.
Okay, so I'm going to read a part of the book where I went in and met with my oncologist 3 months into the treatment plan that I was using to try to reverse my cancer. In the physical exam, Dr. Knight checked various lymph nodes and then proceeded to the pelvic exam. She had a camera ready to take a picture of the tumor. She hunted around and then pronounced, "I see the biopsy site. It is healed." Pregnant pause. "I see the tumor." She was vague about the size, but abandoned the idea of taking a picture of it. This was unusual and an unspoken good sign. She expected to find a tumor more visibly evident. In our conversation after the physical exam, Dr. Knight encouraged me to set up an appointment with the radiation oncologist. She told me that the tumor board of her colleagues had discussed my case and agreed I could try being treated with just vaginal radiation. I was candid with Dr. Knight, sharing reservations about the recommended treatment. The plan seemed like overkill. The potential for immediate and long-term effects of the radiation treatment didn't seem worth the risk, especially considering the status of my cancer. All indications were that the grade and stage were at low levels. It wasn't evident in the diagnostic testing and barely visible in the vaginal exam. I asked her several questions to help me get a clearer sense of what she saw and her understanding of my status. I asked if she had reason to believe the cell line had mutated into a more aggressive type. She told me that this might have occurred if the cells were now producing different proteins, a worrisome possibility only answered with another biopsy. I didn't ask for this, and it wasn't offered. I asked when she recommended our next appointment be scheduled if my choice was to postpone treatment. 3 months was her answer. It seemed like reading between the lines was necessary because I was getting mixed messages. I then asked two yes or no questions. Is the tumor you saw smaller? Yes. Are things moving in the right direction? Yes. Knowing these answers was enough to make a decision. I told her I would like to wait to give the natural methods more time to work. And she agreed to see me in 3 months.
Awesome. Wow. So you actually had a provider who was willing to work with you and didn't like rake you over the coals about wanting to do it a little differently?
Isn't that amazing? I felt blessed in that way for sure.
I think that's pretty rare. Yeah.
Yeah. She certainly could have fired me at that point, but.
She could have. Yeah, you would messed up her numbers, right? If things went south.
Yeah. I know she took some heat for it.
Mm-hmm. I bet.
You know, I think, yeah. I bet. Because she had a board of colleagues that were, you know, all appraised of it.
But you got to listen to the patient, right? You've got to listen.
Well, ideally, if you're the kind of provider who also values the relationship with your patient, you've got to listen to the patient too. Yeah.
Right. We've talked on this show in a couple episodes about the provider-patient relationship. And, you know, it can be very fraught. It can be very collaborative and highly effective. There's a continuum of the provider-patient relationship. So you were super blessed again with someone, Dr. Knight, who was willing to work with you. So you had healthcare training as a nurse. You worked in mental health, but still you had that grounding and pathophys and everything that comes with being a healthcare provider. You had a grounding in functional medicine. You'd been to the Functional Medicine Institute. You had all this stuff under your belt. You had a history of, you know, delving into meditation and spiritual practices. Well, let me back up 1 second. We went over the first four R's, so I want to get back to where I just was, but we said we did remove, replace, restore,
inoculate.
And then what's the fifth one?
Reinoculate, repair,
repair,
and rebalance. So four is,
I'm getting my re's mixed up. So rebalance, right. So going back to your history as a person who's highly educated, highly motivated, you already interested in natural foods and all those sorts of things. It wasn't like brand new to you, right? Yoga and all the things you've done. So you had all these things going for you. And what were any striking realizations you had about the difference in your journey as compared to people who just sort of went straight through the traditional route? You know, what did you realize about all those dynamics that steer people in one direction or another or another?
Well, I think the biggest realization for me was that I didn't look at my burden of environmental toxins, and I did not look at my genetics in the first round. And I think, you know, the cancer treatment is focused on the individual. If we start to look at it from more of a global picture, what we would see is that the incidence of cancers have been increasing remarkably in the last 25 years, and a lot of it is attributable to environmental toxins. And for some reason, the whole science of detoxification is left out of the picture of conventional oncology.
That's very true. And that includes things like heavy metals, all sorts of environmental toxins, insecticides, you know, all the insults against our system, right?
Exactly. A lot. Well, estrogen-based cancers, when you think of that, you think of breast, uterine, cervical, prostate cancer, breast cancer in men. It all has to do with the petrochemicals that are used in agriculture and that we're exposed to, you know, because of, say, jet fuel exhaust raining down on the drinking reservoirs. We're all drinking a fair amount of those residuals. And yeah, it's a big problem. It's certainly a huge public health problem that, you know, conventional oncology would not feel empowered to address, but it's unfortunate because it's a huge problem that could have tremendous health benefits if these things were dealt with.
Well, you know, I have some hope, some optimism. I mean, psychedelic medicine is becoming a thing. You know, the FDA is going to be approving psilocybin and MDMA for psychotherapeutic treatment. So if they can do that, they can embrace things like clearing heavy metals from the body. And I mean, there's some leaps that I feel like could be made based on other leaps that are being made in the mainstream world. So I'm holding out a little hope that some of these changes are on the way because of some of the openness that's occurring out there in the world. Do you share a little bit of that optimism with me?
I do. You know, in recent years, the VA approved toxin testing for veterans.
And really?
A lot of the, that's a real innovation, you know, that I think will end up spreading. You know, when the federal government approves of something like that in one of their systems of socialized medicine, it tends to ripple out. And so I think that's also very hopeful. The annual meeting of the Institute of Functional Medicine last year was all about cancer. And I heard a number of presenters talk about the complementary naturopathic treatments that can go alongside of conventional cancer treatments and detoxing methods was definitely highlighted in the things that they were recommending.
That's really good to hear.
Hopefully those voices get heard and magnified, and you know, people start to understand they can do complementary things alongside.
Yeah, I think that's happening. So, you know, you approach the psychological, psycho-emotional with affirmations. You know, you worked with yourself on that level. You were working with the Kundalini yoga and meditation. And I mean, you've studied Kundalini yoga, Buddhist perspectives, and, you know, consciousness up on top of all the therapeutic nutrition and all the other stuff that you've been grounded in, sounds like, for most of your adult life, right? Even though you started out in aerospace engineering and then moved into a nursing career. And now, you know, here you are exploring all this out loud in public, right? In your book. And you also have delved into raw foods, right? The raw food movement and the ways in which nutrition can impact health, right?
Yes, yes, yes. That's one of the things that I did that first in the first 6 months when I was trying to reverse the cancer, is I went to a 2-week raw foods program that had a real educational focus, and I learned a lot, and I saw some amazing results in the people I was there with. People were just doing so much better with some pretty major physical problems as a result of a concentrated raw foods diet that, you know, it helps to detox, but it also helps with very, very basic nutrition. You know, live food has a lot of enzymes and the nutritional value that components of live food can be absorbed really well as a result of, you know, the enzymes and the probiotics that go with, you know, sauerkraut and sprouts and concentrated green microgreens, smoothies and stuff.
Yeah. There's many, many people of whom I've been very fond throughout my life who've pursued raw foods at various times in their lives and have had a lot of really, really powerful stories to share about using raw foods. And, you know, so you've, what's your hope for the book? Like, if someone reads your book, A Path Forward, My Journey to Find Healing Through Integrative Medicine, what is something, what's a lesson or a takeaway you'd like someone to walk away with?
Well, I guess a sense of possibilities. You know, the feedback I've gotten is, wow, I don't believe I could do that. But I do think people can do, you know, they can make choices and do things that are pretty significant in terms of enhancing their health and feeling empowered to do something alongside of whatever treatment is that they choose. You know, and to get this, the breadth of this picture of, you know, the pieces that go into one's health, and if you look at it from a holistic viewpoint, and the pieces that go into optimizing your physical health when we take a broader look beyond nutrition and into, you know, the understanding of, say, our genetics and what we may have been exposed to that we need to, you know, kind of get out of our system. Now, right. Understanding that the body can accumulate toxins and store the heavy metals and skeletal system, store pesticides and insecticides in adipose tissue. You know, you just understand it, that the body tucks it all away, and if you don't have enough of a healing diet for it to allow to come back out, then you're just increasing in your level of toxins, unfortunately.
Sure. Yeah.
So that's a lot.
That's a big tip.
I wish people would get a lot out of the book.
Yeah. And what's unique about the book is the fact that it's part one is a memoir. Part two is the more instructive, you know, here's how I did it. This is what I found worked kind of thing. So I think that's something that makes the book really unique, being both, not just the memoir, not just a how-to, it's both. And I think that's really fascinating. And the last question I have for you from in this segment of the show is, your sister figures in this story and your sister's death. What was the influence of that scenario, that situation and circumstance? And I'm sorry for your loss of your sister, in terms of this entire process that we've been talking about for the last 45 minutes.
Well, my sister was pretty young when she mm-hmm. got ALL, acute lymphoblastic leukemia. Mm. She was in her early 20s.
And, oh my gosh.
Yeah. And she went into remission and then she relapsed and she didn't survive the relapse. But mm-hmm. in the middle of that, once she relapsed, we talked about alternative ways to heal, and she was pursuing changes in her diet. She was pursuing imagery methodology for reducing the leukemia in her system. And, mm-hmm. you know, I had a lot of respect for her for that. You know, it had been a way that we got closer when we talked about having hope for some remission through some of the things that she was doing on her own besides the treatment they were giving her. Mm-hmm. You know, that was one thing. And the other was, you know, all of a sudden mortality was right in my face. I was only 2 years older than she. And for, you know, my younger sister to pass away, it really changed my perspective about my responsibility, about my own health. And yeah, it also set up some questions that kind of lingered for years and years and years for me mm-hmm. that then when I had my own cancer, they kind of were front and center. And, you know, now it was me that I needed to address these questions for.
So she's with you through this whole process in that way.
Yeah.
That's lovely on many levels. And I'm sure she'd be thrilled about that. And I could talk to you a lot longer, but we do have to wind down. And I have four quick questions to ask you that I ask all my guests at the end of our interviews. And the answers need to be sort of concise because we're drawing to a close. Are you game for a quick lightning round?
Sure.
Okay. So the first question is, how do you define success, either personally or professionally? How would you characterize that?
Well, I think to be working your growing edge, to be learning, to be having your projects for increasing your knowledge or your wellness, mm-hmm. that's personal success.
That's lovely. And could be professional too. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Okay. Second question. Could you name or describe someone who's inspired you during your life? They could be living or dead, famous, or someone none of us would ever have heard of.
I think Pema Chodron is somebody who I find quite inspiring. She's a Buddhist nun who had a Western upbringing and came to Buddhism in middle age. Mm-hmm. And she's written a number of books that make Buddhism quite approachable for the Western mind.
Gosh, Comfortable with Uncertainty is one of my very, very favorites of all time. Yeah, lots of books, right?
And The Wisdom of No Escape was...
The Wisdom of No Escape, that's a good one too. Comfortable with Uncertainty is really my favorite. And she lives on the island of Cape Breton off the coast of Nova Scotia, and she's the abbess of a monastery there. And she's an amazing person. You're the second guest, I think, to mention Pema Chodron. Yeah. That's a good one. I like that. And you brought in your sister to the story too earlier. So you got in too. That's great. Okay. Third question. Is there a book or a movie, doesn't have to be an absolute favorite, that's had a major impact on the way you think, the way you live your life, the way you approach your work, anything like that? And it could be Pema Chodron or it might be something else.
Oh, so many. But I think right now I want to mention Deep Survival by Lawrence Gonzalez. Do you know this book?
No.
He's written a book after interviewing a number of people about how they survived uncertainty in all kinds of ways. So shipwrecked, lost in an airplane crash in the Andes.
Dear, yes.
Bitten by a shark. All this kind of, how did they survive? And he was looking for commonalities. Yeah, I found this book while I was going through my own healing and found it so affirming for my process of kind of keys to what helped me mentally to endure and survive.
Deep Survival. I'm looking at it now online. Thank you very much for that. I learn a lot from my guests. So that's really great. Okay. Last question. If you were named Queen of the World tomorrow, Jocelyn Johnson, what's one of the first things you would want to do to improve the lives of your subjects, bearing in mind that you would have ultimate power, so you could eventually do everything, but your first act as Queen of the World? Go for it.
Oh, I guess it would be to put a spell of kindness over my subjects such that people had to be willing to be kind and to see each other's perspectives.
Spoken like a true scholar of the Buddhist perspective. Pema would be proud. Thich Nhat Hanh would be proud. So I think Chogyam Trungpa would be proud. So you'd be carrying forward a certain lineage of thought. That's really great. Well, I think you'd be a beneficent, wonderful queen, I just have to say. So thank you so much for being here. Thanks for reaching out to me and reconnecting after at least a good probably 20 years. And for the book, A Path Forward, My Journey to Find Healing Through Integrative Medicine, people can find it on Amazon. They can also find it at jocelynjohnsonauthor.com. The links will be in the show notes, as well as your Facebook, Instagram, and your LinkedIn profile. So thank you so much, Jocelyn. This has been lovely. And I think there's a lot of stuff for people to chew on from this episode. I really appreciate your time and energy and consciousness.
Oh, thank you so much. It's a pleasure to speak with you.
Well, there you have it. Thanks for listening to this episode of The Nurse Keith Show. The show notes will be at nursekeith.com. Please check out A Path Forward, My Journey to Find Healing Through Integrative Medicine by Jocelyn Johnson. The show notes will also be on any app where you're listening. I hope you feel uplifted and empowered from this episode. If you're in need of personalized holistic career coaching to elevate your nursing or healthcare career, check out nursekeith.com and Nurse Keith Coaching. Mention the show and get a discount of 10% on your first coaching package. And if you want to become a patron, head over to Patreon, patreon.com/nursekeith. And please share this show with anyone who you think might enjoy it or get something from it. We're proud members of the Health Podcast Network at healthpodcastnetwork.com, and we are adroitly produced by the inimitable Rob Johnston of 520R Podcasting. Before we say goodbye, I'll leave you with this quote, one of my very favorites by the musician Robert Fripp. May my living honor my parents. May my living repay the debt of my existence. Be well, dig deep, seek joy, keep in touch. This is Nurse Keith saying adios till next time from beautiful Santa Fe, New Mexico, and the inimitable Jocelyn Johnson bidding you arrivederci from
Amherst, Massachusetts.
Amherst, Massachusetts, the place where I used to live all those years, not that long ago. Say hi to Emily Dickinson for me. Thank you, Jocelyn. Thanks to everyone for listening, and we'll catch you on the proverbial flip side.